Okay, I'm going to call to order the Board of Health meeting for February 14th, 2023. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody. We are going to defer the approval of the minutes from January 10th until October 10th and so that we can vote on that in person. And now we have public comments. Anybody from the public wanting to speak? I do not see that. Calling once, calling twice. Public comments is closed. President comments, I don't really have any. Good to see at the forum. Good to see all of your smiling faces, and that's about it. Health officer, director reports. Over to you,
Ben. Hi. Happy Valentine's Day or happy Hallmark Day, whatever your preference is.
Mm-hmm.
I just have a few updates. Hopefully you saw the monthly report that I send to the county exec every month that has a big bulk of the updates of the past month for you in there, but I wanted to call attention to just a few. So first of all, our community health assessment and focus groups, both the quantitative and qualitative portions, have wrapped up, and we are now in the process of fully assembling our community health assessment. And so that report will take a month or so, a couple months to pull together. We have it planned for the May 9th agenda to basically turn over the results to you, get your approval, answer any questions. If there is a draft, we're betting on there'll be a draft ahead of time that we can send to all of you so that you can preview it before the May 9th meeting. So just wanted to get that on your calendars, because then shortly after that May 9th Board of Health meeting, we will have a May 17th Health Advisory Council. So this is the large group of about 100 people. It was Cindy Johnson's former, I think she called it the Healthcare Executive Roundtable, with several other community members added. We had a much stronger equity focus. It wasn't just all of the Board of Health and, for example, CEOs of companies and hospitals and whatnot. It has more of a community focus. So that's about 100 plus people for the Health Advisory Council will come together in the afternoon from 2 to 4, I believe it is. But we'll send out an invite for that, to save the date for that, and it will be out at KCC, so out at 50 and why am I blanking on the other room at KCC on May 17th. So please save the date so that you all can come in person and participate on May 17th. That's where we will roll out the community health assessment results and then really actually begin the process of the community health improvement plan and choosing what our priorities are going to be for the next 3 years to work on as a community for collective impact. So that is something we're very excited about. The early results are really coming out quite stunning. This was the first time we've ever gotten a representative sample of the community that was statistically significant. So it is quite telling. Just a bit of a teaser, the top health concern and issue that came out was housing. So much of the results from this community health assessment are geared toward the social determinants of health, as opposed to just the physical and nutrition that they typically always used to show. So we feel much more confident this is a much better picture of the county and the community at large. Our annual report we are also developing, that will be done hopefully within the first week of March. So you will also receive the annual report, and we'll ask that you approve that as well too. As we do every year, just one other update. We received an additional $35,000 as part of our asthma grant. We were very concerned because the state had sort of changed the asthma program to be a reimbursement only, so we could only ask for funding for every client we had. So if the client base was low, we were worried that we would lose that program. But they made us whole for at least another $35,000, which should last us well into the fall for that program. So that's an exciting development that'll keep our asthma program around much longer. We have been doing many Narcan trainings. We started training all the staff at KUSD on the first day a week and a half ago. We trained 75 KUSD staff and have had another training since then. And then we have 2 more days of trainings to get as many of their staff Narcan trained. They are eagerly receiving that. We finished training at the Kenosha Police Department, 144 people in person, and approximately 70 other people who watched our video. So they are now, as far as I know, all officially carrying. We even purchased belt holster carriers so they could carry their Narcan with them at all times. So that was a good collaboration. And the KPD staff are all trained up in Narcan as well now too. Just one other thing I wanted to say was that our environmental health unit, the sanitarians who do everything from restaurant to pools to tattoo and body piercing shop inspections, we're going through a standardization process that this should make us much more standardized as far as how, whether a new sanitarian or a sanitarian that's been around for a while, that, and we do switch sometimes their geographic so that it's not always the same sanitarian with the same restaurants. And so this will produce a much better, more efficient and cohesive way of inspecting various places that will remove a lot of the subjectivity. So we're very excited about that. That's been a year in the making. We've now achieved the first step of standardization, and now we're getting all the sanitarians on board with that. So we're very excited about that. And I will pause right there just to see if there are any questions on those updates. Great. Well, I have asked for a special guest to be on today because at our last meeting in January in person, we had quite a bit of discussion about venous versus capillary for lead draws. And I'm glad to see Dr. Gerlach and Rita on because I think the two of you had said at the last meeting, oh, we're all doing venous draws now. We don't even mess with the capillary. So I marched back over to Gillian Redmond's office, who's our public health nurse supervisor over communicable diseases. And I said, oh, great. Everybody's doing venous draws now, which is a much more reliable test than the capillary. People don't have to come back for a confirmatory venous if they did the venous on the original. And she said, no, Jen, a lot of people are still doing capillary tests throughout the county. So she spent some time, pulled all the data, all the numbers, all the information, and we've been having some really good internal, critically reflective discussions on how do we better take care of our community. And, you know, it's part of the benefit of capillary is it's less invasive, right? It is quick. But if their levels are too high, we have to ask them to come back in for a confirmatory venous, you know, draw. Whereas if we do the venous right away, the benefit of that is we have, you know, the more solid results right away. We're determining what to do in our clinic as well, too, with leaning more toward doing more venous. However, when we're at mobile missions, we'll lean more toward the capillary just for ease out in the field. But we wanted to have sort of discussion with all of you, if we can, as part of the Board of Health mission was that we'd be more actionable and have some more of those really good dialogues. Like last month was amazing, some good dialogue we had there. So we wanted to have some good dialogue about venous versus capillary and where we as a Board of Health want the county to go with this as a unified message to say, how can we better take care of our children? Many, many children did not get tested throughout the pandemic. And so now we're getting a lot more test results in, more people are testing, but what is the message we want to send from the health department and from the Board of Health out to the community and all the pediatricians to say, let's recommend X so that we can better take care of our children in our community. So if I may, I'm going to turn it over to Gillian to sort of share some of the data and share perspective so you can have some context and then we can have our discussion.
Thank you, Jen. Appreciate it. Everybody hear me okay? So as Jen said, I'm Gillian Redmond. I've been in this role, well, I've been with the health department for almost 6 years, but I've been in the role as the communicable disease and lead supervisor since March of last year. So almost a year that I've been in this role. And there's been a lot of changes and a lot of turnover among my team. So I pretty much took on the whole responsibility of LEDs. So I've had quite a bit of experience with LEDs. And some things I wish I took a little better data of, but I will be doing that moving forward. But what I'm meaning with that is there is a lot of, I believe, a lot of misunderstanding among many providers in the community about the values of the venous or capillary results, the lead results, what warrants some kind of intervention. Some are different than ours. In 2021, the CDC had changed to 3.5 as the value, which is what we follow. But there does seem to, in my experience of what I've worked with, seems to be quite a few providers that still follow the 5. So I've run into many situations where if I have a capillary or a venous that is 3.5, and when I reach out to parents, they'll say, the provider said, doctor said, they're good, and they'll just get me next year, retest next year at their next well child visit. Those are the ones that I wish I took a little bit more data on of those particular people, providers, but I will do that and start gathering that. In regards to capillary versus venous, we have significantly higher venous or capillary draws than we do a venous draw. I had our epidemiologist pull a report from February 1st of 2022 to February 1st of 2023. And of 2,219 tests that were drawn, 79% were capillaries and 21% were venouses. So we do see a lot more. There's been a few that I've worked with quite a bit. Lakeside and Kenosha Peds are ones that I've worked with to get them to do more venous testing and to understand that we go at the value of 3.5. So they've been doing a little bit better, but there's still many that I would love to reach, but not able to reach to get them this education to do more venouses. I'm running into the concerns of when they get a capillary, I'm calling to let them know to get a venous redraw at any level of 3.5 or higher. And if the provider's office is busy and they can't get them in for a venous in, for a few months, we have some that are on our wait list or that we are keeping open that are waiting to be seen for another venous testing. 6 months out. We do offer that they come here, but a lot just trust their providers and their doctors, so they don't want to go elsewhere for that. So we have quite a few that are just kind of in that limbo waiting from a capillary to get this venous confirmation draw. I have noticed positively that if the levels are a 5 or higher, most providers are more receptive to me asking that they get the patient in right away for a venous retest. Still having a bit of trouble, though, like I said, with that 3.5 to 5 mark, there just seems to be a lot more who don't want to do much intervention with any results that are under that 5. That seems to be the data I pulled. There are a few around the area. The epidemiologist pulled data from both Kenosha and then neighboring counties, including Lake County as well. Pretty much it appears many of the Ascension, All Saints, and Racines do primarily capillaries. So obviously outside of our jurisdiction, not much that we can do for those. But in Kenosha, there are 3 organizations that do only capillaries, one being WIC, which is fine because then they refer right away to us and then we get them in for a venous draw as soon as we can. And then there are a few that will do venous only. So Aurora Group is one of those that will only test for venouses, which is fantastic. Freighter as well. But outside of that, we don't really have many others that will do strictly venouses. So I think that's one of the main messages we'd like to get across. Venouses are the most important, that decreases those extra steps and barriers for families to get back in. And then also that threshold of the 5 is no longer accurate. It's at the 3.5. So we at the health department, we take interventions for capillary or venouses that are at a level of 3.5 or higher.
Thank you, Gillian. Do you mind talking a little bit about the different level of our intervention from 3.5 to 9.9 and then 10? Like, can you just give a quick, so that they can understand how we, what our response is for the different levels?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a consolidated contract. So we're bound to our consolidated contract in the Wisconsin DHS state statutes. So our consolidated contract is that we will take a more comprehensive intervention at any level of a 10 or higher. And that, and then our state statutes is any two levels of a 15 Venus or a 20. So for our sake though, anything 10 or higher, we get involved comprehensively with our environmental team and our clinical side. We arrange home visits where we perform ASQs, and then we just got set up to enter those ASQs into the Help Me Grow program. So then they will be followed for developmental as well. And then we do a lot of nursing educations on our home visit. We talk about nutrition. We get them set up with WIC and a nutritionist at WIC. Any outside referral agencies, Birth to Three, Early Head Start, home visiting, asthma, we get them set up with that as well. We do a lot of teachings on hand-to-mouth behaviors, hand washing, appropriate, proper wet cloth cleaning. And then our environmental team performs a risk assessment. Well, they'll go to the home and they'll identify the lead hazards in the home. And then they work with contractors and get them enrolled in a program with contractors who will come and they will abate the home to make it more lead safe. And our interventions and our case management with them follows them all the way up until their levels are below a 3.5. So we have them do monthly venous redraws every month until their levels drop below 10. And then every 3 months are our standard until they're over 3.5. If we notice after the homework is concluded and the home is now lead safe, if we notice that their levels aren't trending downward how we would like them to, or they're pretty stagnant, then we go back in a clinical side and we do some more interventions, figure out what else is going on, behavior wise, occupational, hobbies, etc., where else they might be staying to try to eliminate the lead that they're being exposed to. So those are for everybody that's a 10 and above. For a 3.5 to a 9.9, we are calling every patient's family, their parents or guardian. We're doing thorough education. We are contacting providers. So if it is a capillary draw, we're doing the same thing. We're calling parents. We're letting them know a venous is more confirmatory. We're giving them education. We're calling their providers to ask that the providers get them in for a venous draw. I'm educating providers as needed. If it is a venous, we're getting involved as well with that. Same way, we're doing education. We're setting them up with redraws every 3 months. So I will call their providers. I will set that up through the provider's office. If I notice, you know, if the parent or guardian states that there's a lot of hand mouth behaviors, I'm requesting iron levels, etc. So we do our intervention with that. We still will do referrals as well for under 10 to any outside agencies for early development, and WIC, especially for nutrition. And we are always there for them. We follow them until their levels drop below that 3.5.
Thank you. So, so the basic message is there's no safe level of lead, right? The state, by state statute, just to reconfirm what we said last month, they are most concerned when a person has a value of lead over 20, or they've been tested twice and it's over 15 twice. So that's what's in state statute. Obviously in Kenosha, we take a much more conservative route. Where we do anybody 10 and above with a full, you know, in-home assessment, et cetera, 3.5 to 9.9, we're at least getting a phone call and giving education over the phone. So we're basically following the CDC standards, which, as Gillian had mentioned, they lowered from a 5 down to a 3.5. Because remember, there's no safe level. But if we were talking to everybody who had a level of one or a two, that would be thousands. We just don't have the man and woman power to do that. But we do make contact and have touch points with every single Kenosha County kid who is 3.5 or higher. I think the ask of all you today, and what I'm hoping for some dialogue on, like I mentioned, is what should our message be? Should we be doing some outreach to help Gillian and team reach providers, sort of state the new CDC levels, and press for more venous testing over capillary, which is less of a burden, less of a barrier on families. They don't have to then return to another visit at a provider again. And it allows our interventions to start working faster. As you heard Gillian say, people are sitting there waiting 6 months then to get their confirmatory venous, where we're then not able to start our intervention. So it really slows the whole process down when we're waiting on people who have a capillary above 3.5. And I see Kenny's hand up, so I will be quiet and let Kenny ask his question.
So I wanted to know right away, and it kind of led to your point about the time frame of getting people back in once they get that capillary test to go back in and get a venous. Is there a way or something as a health department we could do to kind of advocate or almost mandate those venous testing when we know that there's a certain level of exposure or a certain level of risk.
So I, as a provider, I do not understand why it would take so long to get somebody back in. All it requires is an order at the lab and the patient goes to the lab. They do not come to the provider's office to get it drawn. So that's one of the concerns. I remember years ago, I had one where the family between my nurse and the health department nurse, it took 6 months to get that family to come back to lab to get it repeated. We got reprimanded and had to show documentation of all the phone calls to try and track this family down, because the kid's level was like 40. Yeah, so it's tracking the kids down. So there should be no delay from when there's a high one to getting a venous draw, because all you have to do is the lab and get the parent there.
I think another part to answer your question, Kenny, is that there's a lot of other barriers families face, right? So maybe it's a transportation barrier, or maybe it's a getting time off work to go back to the lab again, or it's sometimes the children aren't displaying any outward symptoms of, you know, of being lead poisoned. So they may think, well, my kid's doing fine. My kid looks fine. So why do I need to go do this? They don't understand the importance of lead poisoning. So those are just three examples, but there could be many, many, many barriers that we're playing a little bit of whack-a-mole to try to get people back in for a confirmatory, which our and Gillian, jump in here. Our assessment is if we can get more people doing venous draws, then we won't be doing that get them back into the lab thing or whatever. And like Gillian said, we offer them to come to the clinic. You can just walk in, no appointment necessary, and we can do it. But people trust their provider, as they should, and they want to go back to their provider or whatever. And so there's just a whole host of barriers keeping people from coming back in.
One of the barriers that we see as providers, I know I do all venous, but I think some of my partners do some of the capillary ones. I don't think they've switched over completely. And the concern there is that when they leave my office, they often bypass lab. And so it's us, the next time we see them, we flag it. Did you get your lab done? Did you get your lab done? Did you get your lab done? And so that is probably one of the biggest barriers for the provider, is they don't think the patient's going to stop at lab.
Okay.
How much does it cost? You know, I know that when my kids were young, we did lead tests all the time because we were rehabbing a house. And I actually came to the health department a couple times But, you know, I just remember at the time that I was really concerned about how much all of these lab tests were going to cost. You know, how much was the vaccine going to cost? How much was this going to cost? How much was that going to cost? And so as a parent, you know, especially if you've got several kids and you're trying to get everybody tested, you've got the issue of getting everybody there. But is there a cost difference right now between a capillary and a venous? And as a parent, if I'm not educated that there could be a cost difference, or that there could be a accuracy difference or whatever, you know, is there any way to kind of, are there grants available that we could say to, you know, to certain providers, you know, look, we'll pay the difference for a venous, or, you know, to, in order to try to make the finances not be one of the barriers?
I think the patients are really not paying for any of it because the vast majority of those that are being tested are Medicaid.
Okay. But I mean, I'm going to say I was in the Columbus Park area. My house that I was in was, you know, 100 years old. We were rehabbing the house. We were not Medicaid, but we were just over the poverty line and, you know, eligible, possibly eligible for certain things. I mean, we were right at the line. And so it may be that the people who are being tested are Medicaid, but that doesn't mean that that's everybody who should be tested. You know, I think we've got, there's a whole group of kids that we need to be accessing. And yeah, I don't know.
You make a really great point, Julia. I definitely want to look into that as well. I don't have the data on the percentage of Medicaid versus non, but I will definitely see what that is, because I think that you're right that cost would be a barrier for some as well. Another I've heard with barriers is that the lab will attempt to draw venous and the child is just not compliant. And it's just a lot of work to try to get that blood draw, and that a capillary is just a lot more convenient for a child and, you know, a lot less invasive for them. So I do know that that is, but you make great point, Julia, about the cost, something I definitely will look into and see what the state-led program has in place for those.
Is there a possibility of having bilingual educational brochures or whatever? And just as we did mobile units for COVID or things like that, could we do mobile units at back to school events, or at, you know, like I know Frank Elementary School does a game night, and, you know, could we do a mobile unit where we have some staff there explaining what's going on, have the parents sign off and get the venous draw right there?
We have talked about that with mobile missions. We've done a few mobile missions and we've actually done with the capillary, just convenience-wise, and to be able to get reach a larger capacity of children in a shorter amount of time. But internally, Jen, Lori, that venous mobile could be something we discuss.
Yeah, we targeted the early Head Start and Head Start programs in early December. I think we may have reported on that last month. Mm-hmm. But with that, we were pretty successful. And then what we did is we, for those who we knew still needed a lead, we just did a reach out program and called every family, and have had greater than 50 return to our clinic from our phone calls. So it can be done. It would be a slower process to go through getting venous, but and again, like Gillian said, we did use a capillary for that. But it was, when we go out and we outreach, it's pretty successful.
I think above anything, a big messaging as well. should be maybe just given an option between the two and let them know, you know, if the capillary is elevated, where the health department will be reaching out for you to get a venous draw as soon as possible. And just that, just across the board, that cohesive message that we in Kenosha County align with the CDC and the 3.5, and that anything above that 3.5, we are taking them on and holding them on our caseloads until it drops below that 3.5. So that mixed messaging across the board kind of, it stirs a lot of confusion among the community. I haven't had much issues if it's very elevated above a 5, usually above a 6. I don't have any problems with them coming, the families going and getting a venous test or a redraw, because that seems to be a very cohesive message with the provider, that reinforcement of, we definitely want to retest this. There are a few providers, again, I wish I gathered this data throughout the past year, but there are a few providers that, you know, will send them back for a venous draw and they'll redraw with a capillary. So I don't know how we combat the capillary versus venous. I'm not sure that there's any perfect answer to that. I think that really it's just, there's so many variables involved in that conversation. But the messaging of the values that we take intervention for, and just being a cohesive unit on that. We do have some lead policies, but I would be happy to get with our graphic designer and put together some brochures that's targeted more towards providers' offices, and, you know, as parents as well too. So. Julia et al., if you all have any ideas of what you would like in that, that would be really wonderful. I'll leave my email in the chat, but I can definitely get some brochures and be happy to drop them off at all the providers' offices that do lead testing here.
I think that's our ask. It's really, we need your support as Board of Health, right? To, you know, whether it's a adding to the brochure or a letter writing, or, you know, provider to provider talking one-on-one with people, or, you know, to sort of help in getting the message out. And so what are your recommendations to help help our community more and circumvent the issues that we brought up?
This is Rita. Yeah, thank you. So I just wanted to say too, I think that targeting family practice providers might be a bigger issue than even contacting pediatric providers. I think they're more likely to have some of these new recommendations of the, you know, the decrease from 5 to 3.5, the importance of the venous draw. I think that that information probably, you know, when you're kind of jack of all trades, you know, sometimes you can miss some of those little nuances. So my thought would really be to target family practice providers who are seeing kids.
Thank you, Rita.
My thought process would be to, again, go back to where most of America or most of people are, in their phones, and do some type of social media campaign and almost make it fun to where it's not, you have to mask the message a little bit, and you have to make it so that, you know, they think it's one thing, but it's really something else. And that's what I've noticed, especially in this market, that you, whenever you mention something that's serious, people don't pay attention. But when you give them fun, they pay attention. So you wrap it in a fun package and make it so that it's almost like entertainment, but at least put the information out there. And I think that'll be something that at least, you know, you just want people to pay attention. And, you know, there was some type of way that as a health department, you could partner with these physicians and say, look, this is what we're doing. This, you know, maybe it might be dealing, like you said, dropping by, or, you know, just having a routine conversation. But I think that the providers and facilities need to understand that the health department is in partnership with what they're doing, and we want to work as a cohesive unit versus you know, everybody being on an island or in a silo.
Absolutely, Kenny. And I found that a lot of work I've done with Kenosha Peds and Lakeside Pediatrics, it's been very beneficial. Now it's they'll come to me beforehand. I don't have to reach out to them, and they'll come run questions by me, and it's really built a great relationship. And that's what we're here for. We're here to help the providers and reach our community members, because we build those rapports with them as well. So it's a great collaboration. I would love to do a campaign. Definitely some fun stuff to brainstorm. Thank you for the suggestion, Kenny.
Okay. Jen, do you have anything else?
No, but Diane had a pamphlet she was going to show.
Oh, wait. Did it go away?
We have these Lead Safe Homes brochures. I think we need to make sure that all the providers have these too. And you could do something similar. This is put out by HUD at KenoshaCounty.org.
Thanks, Diane.
So as a Board of Health, if you know, I want to hammer down to just some actionable items. If you are reaching out provider to provider, helping out as a Board of Health member, is having a brochure or just a one piece of paper, something that you all have signed off on, what is the most helpful to help us in getting the message out for all of the other providers?
What do the medical professionals say? Rita, Diane?
I think a brochure or a flyer to give to people so that they can have it in their office and they can be handing it to parents and discussing it when they hand it out.
I agree.
I also, if we could take that brochure and do some sort of an infographic and get it on Facebook, I end up taking what is on Facebook a lot and either sharing it or using that as, I kind of have a folder and I just kind of shove everything that I see into my folder. And then that way I have that so that later on when I'm in discussion with somebody, anybody, whether it's, you know, the neighbor down the street or whether it's, you know, whatever pops up, I can go there and I have something already there. And we may want to, you know, create some sort of a file like that, whether, you know, for lead, for all the other things as well, and just kind of put them all in one spot on our website so that people can pull it up.
I think, Julia, I like that idea because I think social media reaches a lot of people. The one thing I guess I would caution with that, I think it's fine on the Department of Health website and things like that, but I know that I tend to like tell my patients to stay away from the internet as far as a way of getting most of their health information, because there's so much misinformation. And sometimes, you know, our patients, I think, have difficulty, you know, kind of weeding through like what would be reputable versus what's not reputable. So that is like the one caution I would say. But again, in our day and age, that the internet is how you do reach people. So finding a balance there, I think, is really important.
I think that's a great point, Rita. I think that if we do something, whatever we do, having the, you know, Department of Health, you know, having our logo and our name and, you know, stuff so that it is very clear that this is a legitimate agency and not, you know, somebody
do
else.
Do we have a for providers area on our, on the, like, on the Board of Health website, on the Health Department website at all? Or is it all just general information that anybody can access?
No, it is all just general information. And I think you hit the nail on the head because, you know, we have much social media pamphlets. We have many, many, many materials for the general public on lead poisoning. The ask for here is, how do we reach the provider community better? And, you know, as Kenny alluded to, you know, we're all part of the joint system. We are all working in support of each other. And so that's where we don't need as much help with the how do we get the message out to families, although there's always more work to be done there. It is really how do we work with the provider community. So when, you know, we're looking at a brochure or a flyer or whatever it is, I'm looking at particularly not for what the provider is going to have to hand out to families. We have many of those. We can get those to you today. But for what we need to do for outreach to the providers, you know, to really hammer home the Venus message, the 3.5, all of the rest of that. So it's a bit of a different campaign, if you will, than the how do we just get it out into the community for families. So I'm in particularly just because we have all of you looking at that provider outreach. So maybe if Gillian starts working with our graphic designer to develop something, then let's run it through the Board of Health, Gillian, so that way we can get all of their input now that they've had time, you know, to hear it, and then they'll have time to digest it and think about it, so we can make sure that we're looking at it from the lens of provider education, not the whole community education.
Sounds great.
Thank you, Gillian. What about
having a provider section on the health department website? Has that ever been a consideration? I mean, I think sometimes, you know, especially like as we went through COVID and, you know, the just continual changes and finding the most up-to-date information for providers. It just might be a thought that at some point, not that it, you know, not like maybe necessarily this minute or just with this issue, but to have a for provider section listed.
I don't know that we've ever had one. If you all feel that providers would utilize it, then certainly we can look into having that set up. It would not be hard. Would providers come to our website to find information?
I know during COVID, I went to the health department website awful lot, you know, just to maintain some current knowledge, you know, looking for, you know, between our children's websites and, you know, the health departments, local communities and, you know, things like that. I mean, but not everybody would. I mean, maybe not everybody actually has, you know, knows as much about the health department as I do after sitting on the board for many years. I mean, you know, so I think that looking at my own experience isn't probably the best way to go about it. So I don't know, maybe Diane could talk to some of her colleagues and see if they ever utilize that or, you know, reaching out to other providers. But it's just a thought. I know that, you know, some places, you know, like our hospital website, we obviously have a very, I'm sure Aurora does too, where you have a more specific section that, you know, your providers can access information that is more applicable to them than the general public. Just a thought.
I think it might be beneficial because they can go for things like, what do I do if the kids get a high lead? What do I do if somebody's coming in and they've got TB? Or I had the one where I'm making desperate phone calls because his measles titer came back positive. So things like that, where we really don't, I knew who to call because I work with it, but most people aren't going to know who to call, and especially on a Friday afternoon, you're really scrambling.
Yeah.
No, so that makes sense, and maybe we include a website or QR code, Gillian, on the information for the provider. So let's keep traveling down that planning route of, I like that, so that way when we're going out talking and meeting with them, we can then say, and there's this website to help you on a Friday at 5 p.m. when you have a question. Of course, you can always call us 24/7, but yeah.
Diane explained that much better than I did. Thank you, Diane.
Well, thank you. I know that was a long dialogue, but it was important to have because we sort of sparked it last month at the Board of Health, and I wanted to get further input from all of you. So thank you, Gillian and Lori, for being on here to talk about that very specific issue. So, Julia, I'll turn it back over to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Corporation Counsel's report.
Well, I was just going to mention something. So when you say the providers, you can hear me okay?
Yep.
When you say the providers are the persons we need to get the message to, is that because providers are resistant toward recommending venous versus capillary testing? I'm just curious what needs to be done there, because when I think of it from my non-medical and my legal angle, I think, how would you reach a group of lawyers? Well, we have listservs that serve for government lawyers and patent lawyers and malpractice lawyers. So that would be one vehicle. So if the if the idea is that is a resistance to the venous testing or there's a problem with it, reaching out to pediatricians if they meet as a group, or we have a local bar association, so maybe there's a local pediatrician group that meets regularly and could talk about this and the importance of it. That's just some ideas I had coming back on the end of that discussion we just ended with. So
John, this is and I want to address some of that, because I think, you know, one of the things I'm thinking about is this whole, like, the change from 5 to 3.5. You know, so many of our patients are having their lead levels done at WIC that, you know, as a provider, we're not dealing with it nearly as much, especially when you think about a family practice provider. So I might be, you know, kind of the issue that you don't know what you don't know. So, you know, kind of getting some of those little nuances out to people and having them hear it. I mean, we go to conferences. That's how we maintain more of our, you know, continuing education, but you wouldn't do a whole session probably on, you know, why it's changed from, you know, 5 to 3.5, or that, you know, the only reason I knew to switch to a venous is because there were issues with the point of care testing with capillary, or I never would have even understood that a venous was, you know, a more appropriate test to do. Because again, I'm not doing them every day. You know, it's rare instances, and I think it's become more common for providers to do them now because WIC hasn't been seeing kids in person. Because in the past, I, you know, my kids all had them done at WIC. I could just look and see what their levels were, and if I needed to follow up on it and, you know, pass that information to their primary care provider. So I think that your question has multi different reasons for the answers. And I think, you know, myself, when it comes to anything related to communicable disease and things like that, the health department is going to be my most important source of information. They're the most knowledgeable on some of those issues.
Okay, thank you, Rita. So John, do you have any other corporate council report?
Just a couple things. And I know we've been talking about this ongoing for a while, but on that mental health contract with Lake Behavioral in Waukegan, we're kind of on the last lap, if you will. We've got a committee meeting on March 1st, and then a county board hopefully will visit the issue, assuming it's passed at the committee level, early March as well. The Department of Justice, as I think you heard at the last meeting from Jen Fahn, did look at the mutual aid agreement between Illinois and Kenosha County law enforcement. So we've made a lot of progress. And so the signatures are being obtained for those mutual aid agreements. So the transport piece of it by law enforcement agencies here and also allowing it in Illinois are happening. So that's one thing. I just want you to know that it's continuing to move forward and it's pretty close to the finish line. The other thing I just wanted to mention, I noticed that in the minutes it said that I was excused or whatever. Jen Fahn is probably going forward, likely to be the person that'll be representing our office at the Board of Health meetings. She couldn't do that today due to a court hearing, so I will be filling in, but you'll probably just get one of us versus both of us in the future. So I'm hoping that notices can go to Jen, and then she may be the primary and I may be the backup going forward. So I just wanted to make sure that that was clarified as well. But that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, John, for all your years of help for the Board of Health. I appreciate it.
All right. Do we have any other businesses authorized by law? If not, moving on, do we have any closing board comments? If not, I need a motion for adjournment.
So move.
Second. Thank you. All right. And we are adjourned. We will see you virtually next month. Bye, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.